WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into football season, and we're doing a lot of Ravens conversation around here, injuries and all that. We'll get back to that momentarily, but one of the reasons I created Baltimore Positive was to have these kinds of conversations, bring some people in with some familiarity in and around the political scene and the local issues. No one spends more time in Annapolis than this guy. And Don, you know, you're back to being executive producer here, and I know things are getting serious when we book this next guy, right?
Well, the founder of Maryland Matters, Josh Kurtz, still writing, and he wrote a recent piece that really piqued my attention, is also doing the deep dive into climate change. We'll see how much time we have. Maybe talk a little bit about what he's learning on this journey. But Josh, welcome back to Baltimore Positive. Always great to have you.
Great to be with you, Don and Nestor. Thanks as always. Looking forward to it.
And again, just so I don't forget, because I always, Maryland Matters, it's really one of the first two or three sites I open every morning. I go to it right away. And it's MarylandMatters.org. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I believe if people go there, they'll find a donation button.
They will find a donation button. We're a nonprofit. We rely on charitable contributions. You can make a tax-deductible contribution on our website. And you know, we love you to read our copy, subscribe to our daily newsletter, which is free, all that stuff.
You know, Josh, it's a little bit of an aside. Nestor isn't, we never go straight, we said here, but I was really touched. We all lost a good friend not long ago in Frazier Smith, gone much, much too soon. And I thought, boy, there was a guy that loved journalism. And, you know, we're all used to the in lieu of flowers thing. Right. And I saw that in lieu of flowers, he asked people to donate to Maryland Matters. So I thought, boy, that was what a tribute to you, right, and what that says about our friend Frazier. Just take a moment and talk about what that felt like when Frazier designated you that way.
Yeah, it's happened now a couple of times for people I've kind of loved and admired. And it's both great for us, for the institution. And it's just, you know, it's a tribute kind of to me and the work my colleagues and I are doing. And so it just means so much, and it helps too.
It's great work. And the piece that caught my attention, because I got to tell you, Josh, I hadn't thought about it this way. And I don't know that many people did. I mean, when, you know, okay, we saw a little blurb come across Alan Kittleman going to try to, you know, run against Calvin Ball and become county executive again. And again, that's not surprising. People, once they get a taste of being in the big chair, we know over historical sample, they like being back in the big chair. And Alan's a likable guy. I've never met anybody that doesn't like Alan Kittleman. I mean, there's that classic story, you wrote about it in the article, where on the night he lost, he went personally over to congratulate Calvin and Calvin's family. I mean, that's the way people see Alan Kittleman. He's just, I've worked with Alan. He's always been a gentleman and nothing else. So that was almost surprising
in the modern, well, yeah, you speak of him like that, that feels like an outlier. It feels almost old fashioned to not be an a-hole. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is old fashioned.
I think, right, Josh, it is sort of old fashioned. And Alan's a guy you expect to see to jump in his truck. He's farm, you know, and just drive around. He knew people. It's a famous Harry County name. And a bit of an upset when Calvin beat him, and beat him pretty handily 4 years ago. But that's not the crux of your article, Josh. The crux of your article that I want you to talk about with our listeners is, you said, if it weren't for the shadows of 2022 and what the landscape might look like for Democrats and what's happening on a national scene, you don't think Alan Kittleman would have made that decision. That's what piqued my interest. That's what I'd like you to talk about.
Yeah, well, I think we sometimes forget in Maryland that the political terrain depends in certain ways as much as what's happening at the national level as what's happening on the local level. And you could point to any number of races through recent history and say, oh, that candidate was helped because it was a Democratic year, or that candidate was helped because it was a Republican year. Certainly, you look at our governor, Larry Hogan. If 2014 had been a Democratic year, he probably would have lost. But instead, he's there and he's the force. He became the force that he is today. Howard County, in particular, though it's trending Democratic in most ways, you know, both the number of registered voters, it's now well over 2-1 Democrats over Republicans. In fact,
that's similar to the state then. It's a reflection of the state,
right?
2/3.
And, and non-affiliated voters are actually a few thousand registrants ahead of Republicans, I believe, in Howard right now. You know, the council there is 4-1 Democrat.
Most let me get it, 120,000 to 50,000. Yeah, yeah. I didn't realize it was that lopsided, to be honest with you.
Right. Most of the legislative delegation is Democratic there now. And yet, the last two elections have really seemed to been impacted. For the last two elections for county executive have really seemed to have been impacted by the national trends. In 2014, it was an open seat. Courtney Watson, who was then a member of the county council, the Democrat, was considered the favorite. And in what turned out to be a big Republican year, she wound up losing to Kittleman, the Republican, by about 3.5 points. And then in 2018, even though it was turning into a Democratic year, because Kittleman is, you know, well-liked and a nice guy and a political moderate for a Republican, nobody really anticipated him losing. And then he wound up losing to Calvin Bowles by over 5 points. So it just kind of illustrates that, you know, and certainly, you know, local issues and personalities and the quality of their campaigns were a factor in both cases, without a doubt. I think, you know, the underdog sometimes always gets a surge of support at the end if it's a pretty close race. But I don't think you cannot dispute that the outcome of those two races were impacted by the national dynamics. And so that suggests that 22 could be the same.
I thought it was interesting, Josh, and we'll chat a little bit about California and what happened in that recall election and whether there are any tea leaves in that. I thought it was interesting that you were dismissive, I guess is the right word. And I don't mean that negatively, but I think you threw some cold water on Democrats who believe that the recent Texas abortion law and the Supreme Court's inaction to block that law would energize a Democratic base across the state. And you pointed out, maybe you give us a history lesson here, that abortion in Maryland, it's very different, that it is settled law because of legislative action. And you pointed out that it hasn't always worked to energize the Democratic base.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we talked about 2014. I recall Anthony Brown, when he was running for governor, trying to use the abortion issue against Larry Hogan. And Larry Hogan, who is personally pro-life, will admit to being pro-life, basically shrugged and said, this is settled law and there's nothing I intend to do about it. And, you know, in that respect, he's been true to his word. But the Democrats, I recall, were really, you know, banging on that issue, and it didn't help.
Apparently, it's not settled law in Texas right now, right?
Not settled law in Texas.
That's for sure, yeah.
Taking this big picture approach, Josh, and Nestor and I have sat down. We sat down with the governor. We sat down with Barry Glassman. We sat down with Michael Steele. How nervous should moderate Republicans, wherever they're left? You know, there are some left in Baltimore County. Certainly David Marks is a moderate Republican. Alan Kittleman is a moderate Republican. How nervous should they be about who the Republican Party in Maryland nominates as governor?
I think, well, they should be nervous. I think you could get a good debate. You know, if you look at the Republican primary for governor right now, there are two candidates, serious candidates right now. Kelly Schultz, the Commerce Secretary, who I don't think you'd call a moderate, but she's sort of center right in the Larry Hogan mold.
She's a Hogan Republican.
Yeah, more or less. She's a Hogan Republican. Yeah. And then you have
what does that mean? Is that different than a Reagan Republican, even though he voted for Reagan and justified it somehow sitting next to me with a straight face?
I think in today's modern world, that's something different. I mean, I think even though Hogan has tried to brand himself kind of a Reagan Republican, I think when you say Hogan Republican, it means something else. And, you know, certainly.
But it doesn't mean a Trump. It means, no, you know what it means to me?
Not.
It means someone that nodded and waved while that a-hole ran the world and never came really out. But now checking the smell and seeing the temperature and see if
Nestor,
you run from
think-
it.
I'll ask Josh to jump in on that. Then I want him to talk about who else is running for governor. I don't, God, you've done it to me. You are going to kill me with my Democratic friends because now you're going to have me defend the governor again.
It's embarrassing, Josh. It's almost like gaslighting.
I do not think your characterization, and I'll ask Josh.
He voted for Ronald Reagan.
Stop. Wait a minute.
He voted for Ronald Reagan and sat and told me how it made sense.
Okay.
It didn't make any sense.
All right, Nestor.
So he can be the governor all he wants, but and I, you know, to be respectful of all that, but that's just doesn't make any sense.
You said he nodded.
But what is a Hogan Republican?
You said he nodded and winked with a sense that he wasn't outspoken. I will turn to Josh and say that from where I sit, Larry Hogan has been outspoken against Trump and Trumpism from day one. His rationale for you, I don't think he should have thrown his vote away, but I understand his argument.
I also
argument.
Don't think he could win a primary with that position right now.
I want our guest
right now,
to weigh
right?
in here in a minute. His rationale was that in Maryland, Joe Biden was going to win the state by 30 points, which allowed him the luxury to make a statement. Would I have done that? No, but I understand his answer. Josh, what do you say?
Well, let me agree with each of you in different ways.
Well, I'm glad. I'm usually right. I appreciate it.
Oh, Josh.
Well, no, I agree. I agree with Nestor that Hogan's vote for President Reagan, no matter how he tried to spin it, kind of made no sense. And I would just call it a cop-out, basically. But I do
as a citizen, I feel like you're an unserious person when you do that sort of
right.
thing. When you admit to that, you're not eligible to be elected by me anymore.
All right. Well, that's
how I feel about it. That's
fair.
Not a serious
that's fair
person
as a voter. Yeah, absolutely. But I do agree with Don that Governor Hogan was, you know, mostly critical of President Trump through Trump's presidency, both from a policy standpoint and just from a kind of, you know, tactics and atmospheric standpoint. Now, you know, was he as critical as Democrats? Was he as critical as, you know, we might want him to be? No, of course not. But I think among elected Republicans nationally, he was certainly one of Trump's biggest critics. Absolutely.
So Josh,
well, how can that
back.
Be popular over in the Eastern Shore and Western Maryland, where I still saw this paraphernalia from this loser hanging from everywhere?
Take that little rant and lead it to Josh, to the second part of the question, because he's going to talk about the other currently announced Republican gubernatorial candidate who would be popular in pockets that you travel to, and educate our listeners who that is, Josh.
So, yes. So Delegate Dan Cox is, along with Secretary Schultz, is the other main declared Republican candidate right now. And he is, you know, the unabashed Trump candidate in the race. He very conservative, very bombastic. He helped charter buses from his district down to D.C. on January 6th. He briefly had a tweet up on January 6th calling Mike Pence a traitor. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, he's going to do pretty well in the Republican primary, and I think a lot of people are arguing about what his ceiling is and whether he actually has a chance to win and what happens if Michael Steele gets in that race to the dynamic in the Republican primary. But he's going to be a home for all the Trump Republicans.
That's why this article, this Kittleman article, was a jumping off point to so many discussion. It's why we had to have you on again. We're with Josh Kurtz, founder of Maryland Matters, MarylandMatters.org. And there's a
donate. You know what I like about Maryland Matters the most, and Josh, is he brings out the feisty in you and me. I love that. I love when you when he gets you taking Republican talking points, you're just all wound up, dude.
It's such a diverse site and such great information. But here then, Josh, is the put your political, your Karnak hat on, so to speak.
Yeah.
Do Republicans nationwide, and boy, I don't have the answer to this question, do they see the warning shots across the bow about candidates like a Larry Elder and what that can do electorally? And what I guess what I'm asking you to take then is, does the Larry Elder lesson from California give Maryland Republicans pause and say, you know, maybe we should get on this Schultz or Steele bandwagon, even though we like the crazy that is Dan Cox?
I think for Maryland, it was already there. I mean, I beyond a sort of core, far right supporters for Cox, I don't think anyone in the Republican constellation really, anywhere ideologically think that Dan Cox could win a statewide general election. And, and they see he'd be a disaster for a lot of Republican candidates. Like
you can say that. We can say, we honestly, the three of us, say this with certainty, he would have no chance of winning a fair election in this state, right?
I mean, in the general,
he would have no chance of it. So the best scenario for the Democrats is for the guy to win, right?
Like, of course,
if you were back
in the era of Dirty Tricks, you would be doing everything you can to build support out in the hinterland for Dan Cox right about now, if you're a Democrat. Absolutely.
I think some Democrats are trying to, if you look at what the state Democratic Party is doing, if you look at what the Democratic Governors Association is doing, they are trying to do a lot to kind of boost Cox and his profile, and trying to, connect other Republicans to Cox. So, I mean,
isn't Francho the guy, though, that sits there saying, if I win, all of you will come to me because I'm the best you're going to get.
Well,
like that feels to be the arrogance he takes everywhere he
goes. Let me shift on that, Nestor, to Josh as well, because we're talking now gubernatorial politics, which does affect all these local races.
Right.
Josh, I know you're piped in, and we've all seen some internal polls recently. I saw one recently that actually had, and this, here's my question. If I'm Peter Francho and on his team, does this alarm me? I saw one recently that still has Peter leading, but has him at only 19%. Now, if I've been in office for 36 or 37 years, and I'm stuck at 19% a year and a half after I've announced, is that a red flag for the Francho campaign, Josh?
It might be. I have kind of mixed thoughts about Francho and his appeal and his ability to win. I do think some of, it's true, there have been a few polls that I've seen now where he certainly has not gotten above 20%.
And correct.
You do think, after being a statewide elected for 15 years and being in politics for 35, it would be higher. But on the other hand, I think there's a bit of a hidden Francho vote, too. And I think there's a sort of general thought among the Democratic establishment, well, we hate Francho, so that means there's no way he can win. But if there are really going to be 8 or 9 Democratic candidates, he doesn't have to get much past 30 or 35.
Well, the Democrats said that to Bernie Sanders a couple years ago, right? We hate him, so we're going to make sure he doesn't win.
Right.
The Francho thing's even more interesting than that for me, because as I see it with Michael Steele, and what I see it as a basketball bracket, fellas, right? There's the red team and the blue team, and who's going to get to New Orleans for the championship game? And then it's the style of that fight, right? Like that really is how convoluted all of this is when you consider how Hogan got here to begin with, how piss poor the candidates have been generally, going back to me supporting Bob Ehrlich, which I have completely denounced 20 years later as one of my life's tragic mistakes. And I've said that to Steele sitting next to him over a crab bomb. So I have no problem admitting when I was wrong, I was wrong. Well, I didn't like Fonzie. I was wrong. So, but knowing all of that and knowing how screwy a state this is and how important this state is for the Republican Party and its future, and the notion that Larry's going to go sit in Uncle Ben's seat one day, right? And we're going to divide the Senate up and make this 50-50. You know, there's a lot of dreams and hopes that I remember. And I bet you guys didn't know this. You know, back in the day, Al Redmer was a sponsor of WNST on Monday Night Live show. And Al would sit with me up in Hamden. And tell me how the Republicans were one day going to run the state and run the world. And, you know, later on I could tell him about the plague and all that went wrong between then and here. But I laughed at him. And I'm not laughing anymore. I'm not laughing at Cox or any of these people. I'm trying to figure out what whack job like Andy Harris will never be an elected official again in our state.
You can relax. I think Josh and I will both play Dr. Phil and tell you that you can relax.
I'm muting and drink some of my drinks.
Dan Cox will not be the governor of the state of Maryland. And I think, Josh, you talk to the same folks that I talk to. Universally, the Democrats don't want to run against Michael Steele. They're not fancying a matchup.
They're afraid I might vote for him.
Against Mr. MSNBC.
If it's Peter Francho and Michael Steele in the final, I tell you what, I'd have to do what they say. I'd have to pray a little bit.
You agree with that, Josh, that they don't want to run against Michael Steele out of the candidates out there?
Well, I think that's right. But I also think, Schultz is very untested and unproven, but she could wind up being formidable in the general election too.
No.
And I think Democrats, dismiss her at their peril also.
No doubt.
Hey, Democratic women would vote for a Republican female candidate? I think that's how it goes down in places like South Dakota, right? I mean, that's where it happens, right?
I think up to this point, Josh, what people have been, Republican operatives that I talked to, have been a little disappointed at the energy coming out of the Kelly Schultz campaign. Is that what you're hearing?
I've heard that, yeah, and she's definitely, she's not as visible as she probably ought to be. She's very, very, very cautious.
Right.
I mean, people take note of that, but, we got a long way to the
Let's
general.
Have her on the show. Let's get her out of her shell. I don't even know what she looks like.
Oh, we'll get her on.
All right.
Josh, before we let you run, I did have to chuckle. You guys, and you had to write about it, but you guys wrote about the redistricting commission, what I'll call the Hogan.
Right,
and we went back and forth with Michael Steele on that. I mean, come on. What? Come on. You know, what's a guy say? I was born at night, but not last night. I mean, why are we wasting time giving any oxygen to this thing?
I think for two reasons. I mean, the guy is the governor. He's got a bully pulpit, and so he's going to promote his plan and get a lot of attention. Does it stand a chance in hell in the legislature? No.
No.
But I mean, these whatever maps the legislature comes up with could wind up being targeted by lawsuits, and then, anything goes.
Okay, here's some inside baseball for people, and Josh, you know this. And I think God bless Bill Ferguson and Adrian Jones. We love them both. They're both good friends of the show. Some guy named Hoyer, Steny Hoyer is actually going to play a pretty significant role in all this, is he not, Josh?
Yes, he is.
Give us a little bit of that history.
Well, yeah, I mean, when it comes to drawing the congressional map, I mean, Hoyer is the most prominent figure, period. And he comes armed with consultants and maps and, often enough, you know, with some tweaks, you know, what Hoyer wants often gets adopted for.
It's like that old rock song, or you know, whatever, or that old Broadway song, whatever Steny gets. That's right. So, I mean, I think we know with the maps and the argument that we had, and again, it was fun. We love Michael Steele. We have good back and forth. What I kept saying to Michael was, Michael, you want the Democrats to unilaterally disarm right. in this state. You want us to follow a bipartisan commission, but have the other 35 Republican states right. across the nation just continue to gerrymander the hell out of this. How is that fair? And you mentioned, I loved your comment in the Kittleman article. You said Democrats basically continue to play patty cake while the Republicans punch you in the face. I'm paraphrasing. Right.
Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
sort of what you said.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, it's been going on politically in this country for most of my lifetime, right? Since Nixon, well, pretty much, right?
I think that's true.
Pretty much since they put Nixon away. Josh, so what's Carbs coming? Is here. I'm sorry, go ahead, Don.
No, I was saying, what's coming up, Josh, as we let you go? What's next on the climate change front? Such a great series you're doing.
Well, I have something coming on green banks, which is obscure, and we'll leave it there. But I'm actually now trying to interview all the candidates for governor, Democrat and Republican, about their, you know, policy prescriptions for climate change. So that'll take a while, but we'll be rolling that out, I hope, beginning in mid-October. So,
by the way, Josh, I got something for you. Made you think of you guys in Ocean City and the wind turbines and all that. I had my first Maryland crab cake tour last week in Highland Town at the Chaucer. My buddy Brian Eater is a deep sea fisherman. He fishes in the Marlin, right? He told me they take the boats 96 miles off of shore. Like, I thought it was 8 or 10 or like that you would see. And I've been told at 12 miles you wouldn't see those things. And I just wondered how far out that is. But I did think of your issue there when we talk about everything that you have wrapped around the climate and climate change, especially in a state where the water is rising and all these bad things can happen when water rises in Maryland. I mean, Hogan likes to brag and elbow. I mean, we got more waterfront property anywhere. All the more reason to make sure it doesn't sink, bro.
That's right. That's right. Absolutely.
Well, always appreciate having you on. I love having you on, man. It's almost, it gives Moeller and I a license to argue and have you with the gavel. And I love that, man.
I think today was at record decibels, too.
Yes, so, Judge Josh.
You know, it's been a rough week. The Ravens, you know, aren't playing well. And, you know, Don and I haven't gotten together to argue in a while. So I love having you mediate our disputes. You're a good mediator. You're very calm.
Maryland Matters, folks. .org. Get on there. Donate if you believe in journalism.
Appreciate Don Moeller, my partner, former Baltimore County executive here, along with Josh Kurtz, making things great. We will be with Johnny O on Friday at Costas. If you missed that, you'll find that at BaltimorePositive.com. We're also getting together with our friends at Wise Markets on Sunday at 11 a.m. to eat a signature crab cake. Crab cake tour is alive. It's moving around. Mayor Brandon Scott will be joining us on October the 8th at Coco's, his favorite place. I'm going to be getting some sides and having some fun. We're moving it around neighborhood by neighborhood. It's all brought to you by friends at the Maryland Lottery. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.